Check, check, check.
All right. Welcome to the Presidio Bitcoin Jam.
We're back, baby.
Yet another week. It's Friday. It's noon. A few minutes after.
We're back in our normal spot.
Yes. Yeah. I like the Friday, the sticking to it Friday. When we do the kind of like one-off things, they're always a little topical and not really like just us hanging out, talking about what we want to talk about. So
yeah. Well, I like the live audience. That's great too.
They're fun.
It's great too. It's not this though. And also different by jam. Missing last week's like normal PBJ, now we have a lot of stuff happens every week in Bitcoin.
This was like
so now we have
two weeks.
Right? 2 weeks.
This was a super slow week.
I can't even remember what happened.
Two weeks is tough, but
this week's so
to
big.
Talk about. But this week was a big week.
So what
some are calling
week?
It one of the biggest, if not the biggest, week in Bitcoin.
I would co-sign that.
All right,
I like it.
So what happened this week?
Let's see. Well, I mean, we actually talked twice in the show, I think, about Square launching Bitcoin acceptance. Now that's actually gone GA. It's available to broadly to Square sellers. So that went live on Monday.
And that means if I'm a Square seller and I have the POS, I can do some configuration stuff and then I can accept Bitcoin.
Yep.
Every POS can do that now.
What kind of configuration? Is it complicated?
Well, I have learned a lot. I've also learned a lot this week. Yeah. It's it can be simple. Okay. It can be a few taps. There's a large percentage of Square sellers, it's a few taps. I've also learned there can be gotchas. There's still a few like you have to upgrade your software.
Right.
There's still a few versions that aren't supported yet, but I think, you know, that's going to be rolling out. And then for if you're a certain type of business and haven't done some like KYB before, then you have to do that. So there can be some friction for some sellers. But I've also learned though, and we'll get to what Spiral did this week and some of the stuff we've done. But through our efforts, we're trying to help not just Square, but any POS solution. We want to help Bitcoin payments for it. Because there's still the lion's share of small businesses and merchants in the world don't use Square. In the US, Toast or Clover or other solutions. And then outside the US, Square is not supported yet.
What is the rough market share just to kind of gauge it? Do you think Square somewhere like 10%, 20%?
Of global?
No, of US.
US.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Okay. Toast has grown a lot the past, whatever, 5+ years.
Right.
And I think it's a pretty strong competitor to Square. I don't know the relative size of the two. I mean, I still think Square is much bigger, but the growth rate of Toast has been higher.
And
Square is trying to turn that around. And I think Clover's a smaller player.
Just put that in context. You know, when I think of like the two payment companies I sort of track, Square and Stripe are the two major ones. Stripe is obviously more focused online, but Square does online too. Is that true or is it Square 100% brick and mortar?
There's some online, but I mean, it's not competitive, I think, with...
But like, both of these companies, you know, I'm sure everyone is familiar, but like, you know, to the tune of like tens of billions of dollars, like $50 to $100 billion in valuation. So these are like major companies, and the fact that Square is doing this is like, it's a really big deal.
Well, I mean, a number we do know is like 4 million Square merchants.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's an absolute number. I don't know what the market... I mean, what's the definition of small business and et cetera. So I don't know what the...
piece, but it's
I don't know what
deal.
The market share is.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. So let's see what are some insights? I forget the insight I was going to give, but another insight is that I do think in-person payments, like honestly, 2 months ago, I was kind of, and I think I even said it on the show, kind of skeptical of like Americans buying a coffee with Bitcoin.
The classic crypto.
And we can explain, you know, why I was skeptical, and probably a lot of people are skeptical about that. And then like, why my mind's changed a bit. But one piece of it is that in-person payments, you have that, it's way more of a human connection.
Mm-hmm.
Like with a local merchant, like you've typically, each person generally has like a few merchants that are their favorites, their regulars. That business knows who you are, knows your name, values you because mm-hmm. they know you're a recurring customer. And you care about that business hanging around. Like for DK and me, like local bike shops are a thing, right?
Yeah.
And so even though often I could buy a gear or bike part even 50% cheaper or whatever online, I'd almost prefer to buy it locally just to keep the bike shop in business because mm-hmm. they repair my bike and they...
Yeah.
And when you have a problem, like...
They're available to have a problem or like, to handle a problem.
We had a problem. I had a problem on our ride the other day and like right after the thing dropped it off, you know, 10 minutes later and it was fixed in like an hour.
Yeah.
You can't get that if you go go for the cheapest online thing.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah, and I think that's generally true across, you know, everyone has their favorite merchants and it varies, but
my tea. Right. I could order online cheaper from Japan.
So customers care about the businesses care about the customers. It's just way more intimate than like online transactions. And so I think number one, there's actual conversations in person. And I think Bitcoin can be a really interesting conversation, and we'll get I think it's a different type of conversation than Bitcoiners are used to, because Bitcoiners are used to like, you know, down to the state, separation of money, censorship resistance, freedom, etc. I don't think that's the typical kind of conversation here. Here, it's about like you can save fees, and that's what opens their eyes, and they perk up when they can save fees. And then they ask how, and then it's like just a couple taps and you can, you know, but then it's like, well, okay, who's going to know they can come in and make Bitcoin payments and help you save fees? And why would they, like Bitcoiners will do that, but what about the rest of the people? What's going to motivate them? And as we've talked about on previous episodes, like Pink Owl is going to give a 21% discount, so which is super extreme, but giving incentives and discounts is one. We've seen some merchants show the plushie. They literally, put it right by the cash register. And
really? I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't?
No, that's cool.
Pink Owl does that. And both, so Bob, who works out of Presidio Bitcoin,
Bitcoin Bob, you mean?
Bitcoin Bob. Yeah, I've renamed him with the B is the Bitcoin symbol. Bob's great. And he went to 7 merchants in Larkspur in Marin, where he lives. And all 7... or none of the 7 knew anything about Bitcoin. So they were not, like Pink Owl folks are like hardcore Bitcoiners. These 7 merchants didn't know anything about Bitcoin. He's already converted 2 of them to accept Bitcoin, and they now show up on the map. And both of them are displaying, put the plushie by the register.
Really?
It creates awareness.
Wow.
And it's a lighthearted way to strike up conversation too. Yeah. Again, it's not hardcore. It's kind of silly, kind of goofy. Yeah. But like it's way more human than a lot of Bitcoin content.
Does his face say down with the state?
what his face says is that he's grumpy about 3% fees,
exactly.
which is in the one pager that leave behind the.
But before we end the fees, which is that's the money shot to me. But if the plushie is so successful, and I know we're still owed a performance from DK in this plushie suit, does that mean perhaps Pink Owl Coffee needs someone to come and perhaps dance around with a billboard? He's actually a sign in there. One Saturday? I'm just saying, there is a suit available. There is a man who's supposed to wear the suit.
All right. Dress me up.
We might have to do that.
I need makeup and wardrobe.
But, why could Bitcoin payments actually take off this time? I think multiple reasons. One, again, I comparing Square versus Stripe.
Yeah.
Stripe is it's impersonal. Like it's amazing. Like I'm online, I'm on some e-commerce site, I need to make a purchase. I like click a button. It's super simple. But there's no human connection. There is no conversation to be had. Would I care about using Bitcoin there? Maybe if privacy matters for that purchase, then I would care. If I'm given some kind of money back or incentive beyond what I'm already getting with credit cards, then that could be useful. But
if you're in India or a country, you can't use Stripe. Yeah. That's the other big example.
So definitely there's still reasons to do it for e-commerce, but I guess I'm just more bullish on the in-person stuff for the reason we just mentioned. So that's one reason. I think leading with save fees is definitely, that's been my experience talking to merchants and everyone else's experience.
And most of these local merchants, you might hear 3% and think that sounds small, right? But most of these local merchants are probably operating on something 9 or 10% margin.
So it's double digit. It would be a double-digit increase in their profit margin.
That's a huge win.
Potentially
doubling.
To
take home.
Yes. Right. I mean, if you have 6% profit margin, then it's half of your
profit.
You get
hire another employer.
I think we should pause here because we have not made this explicit. I think this is a big point worth stopping and focusing on. So to be clear, this is my understanding. Any merchant that opts into Bitcoin payments today is paying exactly 0% fees right now. Historically, they're paying whatever it is, 2.9% with Visa plus some like a quarter or whatever the full charges. Visa, MasterCard, each have their own things. But to go from paying 3% to 0%, and to be clear, the fact that Square, and I understand they're doing this through all of 2026 as a promo and then charging 1%. So eventually they will have to pay something, but it's still much lower. Like that's crazy to me. That is such a huge deal. And it's also just like a shout out to you guys for actually, I mean, I'm shocked like everyone was on board with this, but it's wild. And like, it's almost, I was saying this to Bob last night, the only issue I see with it is it almost sounds too good to be true. Like if you go to a merchant and you say, hey guys, would you like to just not pay any fees at all? Like who would say no?
Okay. Multiple things. One, we're already seeing evidence that they're saying yes. Like yeah. Justin, like Bob's anecdote, he went to 7 merchants. None of them knew anything about Bitcoin. Already 2 of them are accepting Bitcoin, right? So people who are passionate about Bitcoin and want to see this happen, get out there and do this. We'll get to Spiral's created a marketing kit for you as well. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I think there's reason to believe that they will do it. Now, what are still some of the challenges though, right? Yeah. Even if they turn it on, well, you know, how many of their customers are going to pay in Bitcoin?
Sure.
So one, they have to create awareness.
Right.
Well, one of the awesome things that was also announced this week is that Cash App and Square and Cash App integrated BTC Map. So for people not familiar with BTC Map, it's been an open source project for at least 3 years with the goal of collecting merchant data that accepts Bitcoin and then storing it in OpenStreetMap along with their license, which is a permissive license. Like anyone can use it. Anyone can use it, but it's similar to AGPL in that if you do incorporate it, you have to make your data available. So
nice.
That's a side
both
issue.
The software that we'll and mainly the get data to it. Of BTC Map are
the software is AGPL and the I forget the name of the it's whatever the Open Business Data License is or something like that from OpenStreetMap.
Mm-hmm.
But the data is stored in OpenStreetMap and with that license. An interesting topic to discuss, probably not, we won't have time today, but is like, I don't see how Google Maps and Apple Maps can use it. So do they have to recreate all this data from scratch?
Because of the AGPL?
Well, the data license.
Oh, okay.
The data license equivalent of AGPL.
Right.
But let's talk about that another time.
Yeah.
But how do you get on the BTC map? Is that when you flip on the POS, on the Square POS?
You have to opt in.
Or?
You have to opt in. So part it's of that Square. Workflow? Yeah. We did it here. So Presidio Bitcoin has Square point of sale and we had to opt in. It's important to, so a lot of Bitcoiners are like, why not enable all this by default? Why not opt in to the map by default? Well, a lot of business owners, it's like their home address. So doing that opt-in without their permission,
right.
Like, as I joked with folks, like who doesn't want a bunch of rabid Bitcoiners showing up at your home?
The book of Satoshi, ready to go.
So I think we're seeing evidence. It's public information, like the absolute number of merchants coming onto BTC Map, and it's been quite. I mean, it's over 1,000 as of like Wednesday or something. So I'm sure it's like a couple thousand now or so.
And
I think it's a reasonably high percentage of merchants are opting into that.
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, it's worth noting again. Like, I think the point I would drive home is like. And I know we're going to get to the payments and how Bitcoin can be done even in the background. But like, again, imagine you're a merchant. If someone comes to you and says, I'm going to save you all fees. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to put you in a map, which is just going to bring some crazy customers that are probably like pretty well off to spend a bunch of money with you. Like the only challenge is like, I think the more I watch all this unfold, the more I'm just like, of course this is going to work. Like, and I'm shocked I was so skeptical.
I mean, I agree. Another reason, because like we've been here before, right? 2013, 2014 hype wave. It was like the first Silicon Valley hype wave and it was a ton of payments. Square turned on Bitcoin payments back then. And I think they had like
no one.
One transaction a day or a month or, and it was like abysmal. But think about Bitcoin today versus 10 plus years ago.
Well, for one thing, we have Lightning now.
Look, everything's changed. I mean, like the number of people who own Bitcoin, the number of people aware of Bitcoin, the number of people who the technology, the tool, like look at the application. There's dozens of apps I can install on my phone, which have a anywhere from a decent to good and some even like pretty great user experience for making payments. Like if I use Phoenix or Cash App, Primal, all of those make the payment in like 1 second or less. It's like, it is truly lightning fast. So,
And by the way, I think that's worth stopping on. Cause I thought about this. We had not to side rail us too much, but a sort of, Bitcoin startup night, Silicon Valley night here last night. And DK kind of was trying to get out of us the question of like, what changed? Why did Silicon Valley get it so wrong? to their credit, and not just Square, if I recall, Stripe in that era also enabled Bitcoin payments, right? And so I think, you know, a lot of people in Silicon Valley before they went full shitcoin, you know, they're used to seeing businesses, and businesses grow pretty fast. Either get adoption or you don't, and then either works or it doesn't. They're not used to looking at protocols like the internet, like Bitcoin. And so a lot of people in that first era, you had companies like Stripe and Square, you had BitPay, all these companies that said, oh, Bitcoin's gonna be the next big thing. This is value for the internet. What's good, people are going to use value for payments? And then they integrated it. But then, you know, before Lightning Network, which allows for, you know, peer-to-peer instant final settlement, instant being the key word there, you know, if you're sitting there and you're waiting 10, 20, 30 minutes for confirmations and no one has Bitcoin, all these other things, of course it's not going to work. So just to kind of loop back to our conversation last night, I think it's worth noting Silicon Valley did get Bitcoin early on. The tech wasn't ready. They weren't used to protocols. Now the protocol is finally ready, and you know, at least one company stuck around.
Yep. So, yeah, I think comparing it to 10 years ago, like things are dramatically different. That's another big change.
And the general awareness, like from TradFi, you know, love it or hate it, but it's a force for awareness in the world. And national politics, love it or hate it, but it's a force for awareness in the world.
So, but there's still barriers. So let's talk about some of the, I mean, because you're saying like it's a no-brainer for a merchant to enable it. I mean, I agree with that because it's like it's simple, or at least for Square merchants, it's simple to turn on. Oh, I know what I was going to say earlier. Let me add that really quick. This has forced me to better understand the other existing Bitcoin point of sale solutions. Because with the Spiral project, we created a website for merchants. And we didn't want it to be Square exclusive, because even though we work for Block, like our mission is all of Bitcoin, right? And so number one, we want to be neutral and fair and credible. And number two, like I said earlier, there's a ton of merchants around the world who can't use Square or don't use Square, right? Mm-hmm. So what do? So we on our website we promote other point of sale solutions too, but it's very different than Square.
Well, obviously, I mean, these are like startups.
Well, not just that, but just like Square is sort of your back-end system too, just as Toast and Clover are. So if you're using Toast and you want to accept Bitcoin payments, yes, you can use Wallet Satoshi or Mana or Ibex Pay or BTC Pay, these various solutions. But it doesn't integrate with your back-end system. So then you have two separate records of transactions, and then it likely complicates your accounting and taxes and everything.
Yeah.
So it's just a way bigger barrier. So I fear that for those merchants, it's still, you got to be a hardcore Bitcoiner to do that.
I mean, to use a non-Square POS to accept Bitcoin.
Well, if you use a non-Square.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't use Square and you need to use a non-Square Bitcoin POS, it's a much way more friction. Mm-hmm. So you have to be a hardcore Bitcoiner. But with Square, you don't have to be a hardcore Bitcoiner, and we're already seeing evidence of that play out.
I would say one potential exception on that, and I don't know how you want to address this. And by the way, excellent URL. So you've got bitcoinformerchants.org. Is that right?
We have 1.5.
What does that mean?
Spiral purchased bitcoinmerchants.org.
Okay, Bitcoin.
A premium domain.
Nice.
But we thought it was a good value.
Super good value.
And then we learned that the broker we were working with didn't own it. Someone else owns it. Mm. And we learned that it can take weeks to actually get control of the domain.
No instant final settlement.
So we did not get it in time.
We should have domains on Bitcoin.
Well, we didn't get it in time for the launch. So we also acquired bitcoinmerchantcommunity.org, which is a great name. It's a mouthful. It's a long domain name, but that's what's live today.
But bitcoinmerchants.org is coming.
If
we can work it out.
I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of like sending a wire versus a Bitcoin transaction.
Exactly.
Right?
Fair enough. Yeah. Like, we'll talk about
that. I don't know if we'll get that. But too. If we get that, anyway, that's a whole nother issue.
So I think there's almost three categories of merchants in my mind. I don't know how you want to handle this. So obviously, if you're Square, to me, it's like, I mean, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't do it. Okay, great. Then there's if you have another back-end system and you like Bitcoin, but it's complicated, you know, as people get more aware, increasingly more people will be interested in do it for things like Ibex and, you know, whatever, whoever's doing that, great. Then I think there's the third category of merchants, which is people that are just pure cash today. And then I think for them, maybe BTC Pay Server or something like that, like I could see a world where, and this is not small numbers, like just Mexico where I used to live, 50% of the economy, pure cash.
Yeah.
And so I could see that other use case where if they get the tools, like as awareness grows, you're like, okay, yeah, I'll put in a little extra work up front if I can make Bitcoin work like cash.
Yep. Great point. Blink is another example of point of sale solution. So that third category, I agree, is really, it's huge. It's really important. And especially outside the US. And I think that's where things, solutions like Link and others could be great solutions for that. So, with respect to like Square merchants, I agree. It truly is a no brainer for them to turn it on.
Yeah.
It's very little time for them. It's only beneficial to them.
Do they have to commit to holding the Bitcoin, or they can receive it as USD?
No, they can receive it as USD. Okay. That's why literally there's no drawback. So, they don't face any new tax situation. If they don't know about or care about Bitcoin or don't even believe in Bitcoin, they don't have to touch or hold Bitcoin at all.
USD.
They just receive USD. Right. It just expands their payment options for their customers and also creates a marketing moment for like new customers to come in.
So I don't want to steal your thunder, but to me, all those announcements are great. And by the way, I just have to say, shout out to you, shout out to Jack, shout out to Miles. Like the Square team, I don't know what the hell is going on over there, but all of a sudden it feels like Elon is running this thing. There have been so many damn launches this week that I've been shocked. The one that got me though, it's like, okay, Bitcoin accepted, that's cool. BTC Map, that's cool. We're going to talk about some other stuff from Cash App, you know, no fee stack, and that's cool. The thing that got me was you can now, as a merchant, I say, hey, you want to pay with Bitcoin? Go into Cash App, okay? And choose, do I pay with my Bitcoin balance or my dollar balance? That to me was the single, I was shocked, shocked.
And you don't even need a Bitcoin balance.
Tell us about that.
I will.
Sorry.
But I want to, hold on, we're still on the, I want to talk.
We're getting there.
It's very methodical.
Friction. I want to like, let's talk about friction and then we'll get the, because that's
a big deal, guys. We're coming.
But the friction. So I agree. It's a no-brainer for a Square merchant to turn on Bitcoin payments, but that still doesn't mean success.
Yeah.
Meaning we could still live in a world where, yeah, for a few weeks, there's some Bitcoiners that go to these stores and pay in Bitcoin, and yeah, you know, and then like by January, no one's doing it anymore. Kind of like 10 years ago, maybe like 10x the scale of the hype cycle, but it disappears. That absolutely could be the outcome. I don't think it's going to be the outcome. I'm optimistic, but that could be the outcome. So what are the barriers? Well, number one is customer awareness to even, let's split the customers in two segments. One is Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners are aware of this, I think, especially with like the amazing masterclass of communications and marketing this week. But normal people, the rest of the people, aren't aware of it. So how do they become aware of it? Number two, there is friction for a normal person, even a normal person who owns Bitcoin, because they typically own an ETF or have some in Coinbase or Cash App, or they don't, and they might have a spending wallet on their phone, but many don't. So that's friction. So how do you create awareness, and how do you motivate people to spend, consumers to spend time to get a spending wallet on their phone, even though the UX of those apps are, like I said earlier, are good now, but still you have to install it, you have to somehow get Bitcoin into it. So there's still all that friction. And then third, what's the motivation for them to spend Bitcoin? Especially a lot of Americans, they get, you know, 1-2% cash back with their credit card. Why go through all this hassle? And then why spend Bitcoin? I don't get any money back. And then the fourth reason is that because merchant adoption is so low, it's just super awkward. Like, it's kind of like if you have like a Discover credit card, but even way worse. Like if you go, you go into a merchant and they're like, do you accept Discover? And you're told no most of the time.
Right.
You just feel beaten down. It's a waste of time. It's awkward. You feel like an idiot. Like, oh, I should have Visa. I should just use Visa.
How it always Discover even
Visa, Visa always. Well, in America, like I had a Discover card. And
why?
Everyone accepts it.
What are you doing with this Discover thing?
When different era. But I used Discover in Iowa.
Hey, just throwing this out there. Quick random idea. Since Discover is so backwards and like small or whatever, but somehow has survived, is that like an acquisition target for Square or somebody just like, hey, we're going to buy our own network, turn it like whatever, convert them all to Bitcoin, throwing it out?
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I think those are the remaining. Oh, and then taxes as well. But honestly, I rank taxes lowest on that list. I think it's the psychology of like a very low percentage of
the speed at which Steve ships the ideas you guys come up with on the show is epic.
Yeah. We got some interesting comments.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because we actually, yeah, the Spiral stuff did stem from the show. Yeah. So, but one of the developers who is a former Spiral grantee, we were chatting about like what are the remaining barriers, and here's my ranked list. I still think number one is like lack of reason for consumers to spend Bitcoin. Why? Now, we said in the show a few episodes ago, if Pink Owl offers 21% discount, that's going to get normal people installing wallets, getting Bitcoin on it to save 21%. That's steep. Eventually, even like a small kickback could be valuable. Which actually, another news item from this week is Visa MasterCard settlement. Apparently, there's been a 20-year legal battle, and there's a settlement. Are you guys not aware of this?
I'm not aware of it. Yeah.
I think it has huge ramifications, because today, any merchant that accepts Visa has to accept like any card. It's like in their agreement. So that's why if you get these rewards cards,
that's
have, like,
huge.
Amazing rewards. The merchant actually has to spend more on fees when consumers use cards that have higher rewards.
What do you mean any card? So they have to accept Discover? So Discover
is this like some Visa anti-monopoly Visa. Thing?
No, Visa issued. They have to accept any Visa card. So if you're a merchant, if I come in, let's say I have two Visa cards. One has a way better consumer reward for me.
Yeah.
But you have to pay more in fees.
Yeah.
You have to accept it.
Yeah, but it has Visa on it. Visa says you have to accept it.
You can't discriminate and say...
We'll accept some things with Visa, but other things with Visa.
The settlement, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but who's enforcing that? I mean, can't the merchant just be like, nah?
No, Visa will be like, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Visa's an enforcer, right? So,
which is something else we should talk about. But
but with the settlement, that is going away. So I think this is massively disruptive. So merchants can all of a sudden say, no, we only accept the Visa cards that have lower fees.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to create tons of consumer confusion and frustration, because all of a sudden, like there's like a whole segment of people who optimize their cards to get the most money back.
Oh yeah.
If all of a sudden if it introduces this problem of like, oh, all of a sudden most of the merchants like don't accept this, and now it's kind of like a 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
Or it keeps declining. Then it's
feels
like,
more like Discover.
It feels more like Discover. And so it just opens up. I think that is going to open up a huge opportunity. It just happened. I have no idea how it happens to coincide. Literally announced this week, but it happens to coincide with
this. No coincidences.
So huge. I think number one issue is like lack of reason for a consumer to spend. But if they get discounts and incentives, and again, if it's in person with your local favorite merchant, just the emotional, I'm helping
enough.
My small business that I love and care about. Those are reasons to spend in Bitcoin, because it helps them out.
Well, and by the way, I mean, so if you ever got the plushie there, your friends, they ask you that. Like, I think that, yes, a little kickback is probably like the final thing you need. But also, like, I wouldn't underestimate, you know, most people are like at least somewhat curious. Like, people have innate curiosity. And most people are going to be like, what is Bitcoin? And if you have the little thing left behind there, and they're going to be like, oh, cool, I've heard about this. I've never played with it. Like almost every person I've talked with, unless they're completely, you know, anachronistic, which maybe they're right in the long run. But like, I think people are like, think it's cool too. That, you know, as long as they don't already hate it, it's like, why not try this new thing?
Right. So I think that's the number one reason, but I do see it being addressed. I think the number two reason is the percentage of merchants. Just like if it's hit or miss. Well, one way to address that is with a map, right? And again, BTC map has existed, but it's been pretty sparse. And if you look at it now, it's still sparse, but it's growing quickly. And you can imagine it becoming not sparse. And so having tools like that, and also the integration of BTC Map, it's already in like Wallet of Satoshi and Zeus and a bunch of other, Aqua, Albi.
Yeah.
But now it's in Cash App. So it's just more and more integrated in wallets and accessible to people. That will help with that issue. I think those are the two primary issues, and they're being addressed. Now, others will cite, oh, people don't want to spend their Bitcoin. We've talked about this in the show. I actually think it's BS. I mean, I agree that is a common refrain, but I don't agree that that's actually going to hold people back from spending. If I'm offered 21% discount, like I'm going to have my savings account with Bitcoin. I don't touch that. And then my spending wallet, which I'll keep replacing, you know, spend and replenish to get my 21% discount.
But to be clear, I will say this. I mean, look, I would do a little bit of that just like for the love of the cause. But like, you know, it would only be for the love of the cause. Now with this feature, I will tell you, I will not be spending any Bitcoin from Cash App. I will be 100% on every transaction dollars, $2 using Bitcoin in the background, that's the killer app. That's the killer app. Well, 100% of the time.
We'll get to that. I agree with that, but we'll get to that too. But even just for even forgetting that feature or dollars, I still think if you have an incentive to spend Bitcoin, you'll spend Bitcoin, because you're in one of two camps. Either you hold dollars as well, and if you do, then you can spend and replenish.
Totally.
If you don't hold, if you're 100% Bitcoin, you have to spend Bitcoin.
Well, for me,
so there's no situation where you wouldn't spend.
I do think it's important. I think honestly, this like blitzkrieg that's happening right now is going to solve this problem. Like I would 100% do that if I didn't have any tax concerns. Honestly, yeah, I just don't want to deal
with
that.
So then, that's the next thing in the list is tax concerns. And I think there you're going to have some segment of people who would just be civil disobedience. They'll be like, "This is
shout out to Darth Quinn.
This will be BS. I'm going to spend money, and like, if enough of us do it, the law will change."
And that's happening.
Then there'll be a segment of people who are ignorant, meaning they don't know that it's taxed, and they'll just spend because that's they're getting 21% off.
Yeah,
and I think that'll be a much larger group than civil disobedience, proactive, knowledgeable civil disobedience. If the two groups combine are big enough, like the law will change.
100%.
I mean, look at the Uber playbook. Yep. It became so popular in cities that even though cities resisted, and whether or not laws were being broken or taxi broke, tokens or whatever, it's ubiquitous now, right? Because there's so much value to consumers. So imagine a world where there's like tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of small businesses in America who are benefiting from this.
Yeah.
That's strong voting power and political power. They're not going to like shut that down, right?
Awesome.
So I think that will address that issue. But also, I'll leak a little alpha on the show, but like,
ooh, here we go. You heard it here first.
Let's just say that the announcements from Block are not done yet. So stay tuned for Monday. That's all I'll say. But anyway, I think there's plausible answers to breaking down all the barriers to spending, and then we can get this sustainable, and not just like a one hit wonder and then it goes away, like sustainable. Now you want to talk about the not only spending Bitcoin, but yes, an enormous announcement from Cash App this week is that you can, from your dollar balance in Cash App, which there's 60, 70, 80 million Cash App customers, some like huge
number, even more. It's a real deal.
That have Cash App or have dollar balances, they can now pay Lightning, like Bolt 11 Lightning invoices with their balance, whether it be Square or any Lightning balance. So, I feel very Gen Z now.
Well, I learned that was not Gen Z, but Gen Alpha. Yeah.
Gen Alpha.
DK has moved on from Gen Z.
We're getting alpha from the alpha.
So obviously it's huge because a ton of people don't have Bitcoin yet, don't have spending Bitcoin yet, or they have a psychology, even though I disagree with them, but they have a psychology, I don't want to spend Bitcoin. Whatever the case is, it's a huge segment of people who can now pay this Lightning invoice. And like, why do they care? Well, the merchant cares because they saved the fees. Right. So the merchant care. So you still get back to the problem. How does the consumer know to do that?
Totally.
And what's motivating them to that?
Well, the merchant.
All of a sudden, they don't have to be nearly as motivated because they don't have to install a Bitcoin wallet. They don't have to acquire and hold Bitcoin.
Right.
I guess another friction is like some people are worried about the volatility, right? I mean, check the Bitcoin price. It's gone down recently, right? Anyone in Bitcoin is accustomed to that, and it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're newer to Bitcoin or you're not yet into Bitcoin, that
is
can
it
be
95% yet.
that can be scary. So, for all the people who hold it, the friction to doing this is much lower. The only friction is you have to be aware.
Yeah.
And you have to, when you go to a merchant, you have to say, "I want to pay in Bitcoin," even though you don't have Bitcoin. Because the merchant has to like use the UI to switch it to a Bitcoin QR code.
So okay, 2000.
So that actually is still friction, and I know the team is thinking like in discussions about how to make it so that the default screen shown to a consumer can handle anything and everything.
Yes,
if we can, I mean, and it's challenging. But if that can be pulled off, that would be killer.
I love it.
Because otherwise, it does create a little bit of an awkward situation, especially for people who don't hold Bitcoin. If you hold Bitcoin and you're into Bitcoin, then you're almost enthusiastic to be like, oh, I want to spend in Bitcoin. Can I spend in Bitcoin? Or, you know, here's how you do it, Mr. Merchant. Here's what you want. Whereas if you just have hold dollars, it's weird and awkward to say that.
Yeah. Okay. So a bunch of thoughts there. And I know you guys are already sort of ahead of the curve, but to me, a couple things here. So number one, you know, let's say there's 70 million Cash App users and 4 million merchants that use Square. So Square is in a very beautiful position compared to anyone else in the world because they own both sides of the transaction. That's a really, really big deal. And so I think one of the first things that's going to happen here, and I think this would actually be dope for Cash App to do, Miles, if you're listening, I'm sure y'all thought of something similar, but like imagine for a minute, because you guys remember even a couple of years ago, there was a Cash App Pay, even pre-Bitcoin. And with Cash App Pay, it's like I'm paying with Bitcoin, or sorry, I'm paying and on an internal ledger between Square and Cash App. Great. So they already save fees for the company. That made a lot of sense. Miles tweeted they deprecated all of the old internal ledger and now it's all Lightning, which is awesome. So they're clearly moving that way. That's a big deal. But I would always, like, look, I always try and support the Square ecosystem as much as I can because I know what's coming. So I pay for things like Tidal. Shout out to Max. I know we're going to get Bitcoin payments there. I used to use Cash App Pay because I know we're going to get Bitcoin and we already got that there. But imagine for a minute the merchants, like, even if they don't want to explain Bitcoin, the merchant is so incentivized to save money now, all they have to do is say, hey, listen, you download Cash App right now. I think they already get a $5 referral. Maybe you could sweeten the deal, doubling that by saying with your first Bitcoin transaction, you could get whatever, double that right now on the spot. I'm going to give you 10 bucks. Just download Cash App. You've heard the rappers talk about it. Kendrick's, I'm sure, mentioned or something. It's cool. And you save, you help me out. Like, dude, the Cash App could just explode. Like, think about that for a second. Like, every single person, and eventually I know the next thing to figure out is, like, once you have one QR code, and then even beyond that, the real killer app is once you can do with NFC or some way to pay, just like tap your phone, like Apple Pay there. Once you do that and you make Bitcoin the default, like, I mean, my big question is, like, you know, the old payment networks just got disrupted. So
I will say, the Square team is working on NFC support as well.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable sharing that. Miles has been very comfortable sharing the roadmap, so I'll feel comfortable too. But
yeah, Miles is being real right now. He's showing everything.
But doesn't iOS protect their monopoly there or no?
Yeah. So we've worked with a lot of different, Spiral teams worked with a lot of different wallets on NFC support. It's a bit complicated. But I'll try to explain it simply. If any device can be a sender and do an NFC payment, but only an Android device can receive. Unless you sign a partnership with Apple, and then an iOS device can receive. So that's the situation. It's a permissioned API from Apple. Hopefully that changes.
Are there examples of the kinds of things that they do enable that for?
Because I don't know, any popular but app. I would think, like, so it's maybe difficult if you're like a small startup in, you know, El Salvador, or you're like an open source project. But if you're Block, I would hope and think that Block could sign a partnership with Apple. So hopefully that's explored. And then not only would Android devices from, I mean, Square has both Android and iOS devices, right? So what Square could do already is support receiving on all the Android-based Square devices. And then any consumer using a wallet that supports NFC, and there's already several that do, like Phoenix supports NFC, Zeus does, Wallet of Satoshi, I think, does. Like, it's quite easy to enable. Then NFC could be used.
So are the Square terminals, are those Android-based or no?
Some are. Like, the new handheld one is Android.
Which, by the way, that I hadn't played that until last night. It's nice.
It's basically a phone.
It's dope.
Block basically created a phone.
Yeah.
But some are iOS, some are Android. And then, of course, on regular phones, Square is supported as well, both on iPhone and
to be clear, you could also do this with a card, no? Because everyone's got, I even had this from back in the day, like the Cash App card. You can just have that be like a tap, NFC too.
Yeah. So I think that'll come. That'll improve the user experience. And hopefully iOS-based Square devices will get supported as well. So that's one thing. I forget what else you were talking about. There's some other, Anyway, I think that'll really improve the user experience.
I mean,
as well.
This is a big deal. You guys just opened up.
I know. I wanted to talk the other dollars and Lightning. Yeah. So huge thing for Cash App. So, I mean, basically, anyone using a Bitcoin wallet that supports Lightning address can now pay a Cash tag, and then vice versa.
Really?
And there's a commitment. I've been trying to persuade Miles for years to support BIP 353, which we don't have to get in the weeds what that is, but he now committed to that publicly. So that will come. So to
I imagine BIP 353,
a better version of Lightning address.
Okay.
I've told you guys this for years, and you
is this Bolt 12 again?
It's Bolt 12.
I knew it.
We'll dedicate an episode to that in the future. But
have you heard of Bolt 13?
Yes. A Spiral funded a grantee working on Bolt 13.
Are you serious?
It's for Watchtowers.
Oh, this was a joke. I was going to launch Halloween or something.
But we'll get into that. Let's just call it human Bitcoin address. Like whatever the technology is underneath, human Bitcoin addresses. So I think in a year, what I'd like to see is Robinhood, Venmo, Cash App all supporting this. And then you have interoperability between all these products.
That's sick.
Plus all the other
Bitcoin wallets
in the world, not just big companies like that, but like big companies like that who each have their own ecosystem today will become interoperable along with everyone's startup, everyone's open source, favorite open source project.
Generally open to that, or is there
I'm going
to
put enter. Yeah. Well, I can think of reasons why they wouldn't, but
did AOL not survive?
But anyway,
because they're done. They should have plugged in the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so
but Spiral's going to be selling that.
One question on that. So I want to just pause here. So are you telling me right now I can go into my Albi account, my Albi wallet, and I can send a payment from Albi to my Cash tag right now?
Yes.
Where's my phone?
So in
this thing.
Yeah. So I mean dollars on Lightning is now in Cash App, right?
I gotta see what my tag is.
So
Does dollars on Lightning mean you're sending as if it's dollars and it's converting to Lightning?
Strike did this like 3 years ago, mm-hmm. So it's the same concept.
My
personal story, I was in Ghana, like 3 years ago, I think, for the Bitcoin conference there, and went out to eat at a restaurant, and actually it was with Block employees. Jack was there, and you would expect the CEO to pay for the bill, but he makes me pay because I was the senior person.
Smart man.
Referring to my age, not my position at the company.
You're older than Jack?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man.
I feel you.
I don't want Jack to hear this segment you're like...
Well, I didn't mean that that way.
You're saying I look really young. Okay, thanks,
Max. Wait, so what's my... Is it Max A. Webster? I shouldn't be like docs, whatever. This would
I don't
it
know.
Be
Let's play with that later.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, I paid the bill at this restaurant using my Strike app on my phone, which is connected to a U.S. bank. I had a U.S. dollar balance in Strike, and I just typed in like the local phone number of this restaurant. I didn't have to know anything about the local currency or the mobile payment technology or mechanism or anything. I just typed in the phone number and it actually made the payment, and it went from, you know, from Strike to the Lightning network to so there was a Bitcoin to dollar exchange that Strike had
kind of real time.
Yep. I mean Strike made all this happen, and now Block has as well. So there's a Bitcoin to dollar dollar to Bitcoin exchange. It goes out over the Lightning network to another exchange, which then converts it back to a local currency, which is then paid over the mobile payment network in Ghana.
And was the Ghana merchant, they had a POS or a phone, or they were using Strike, or how did they?
No, they don't need to know anything about Strike. They don't need to know anything about dollars. They don't need to know anything about Bitcoin. They don't need to know anything about the Lightning Network. They don't need to know anything about the partners involved in all this. They just receive mobile payments on their phone, which is like just common in Ghana. To use a mobile payment.
All right, I'm just going to give a quick shout out. Matthew's saying he'll test it. Let's do it live. Max A. Webster. I want to see if this works. And if, tell me, oh, damn, my bro is on it. I'm curious to hear which wallet you sent that from too. Well, I'll tell you if I get it.
Well, I'm guessing he sent it from Cash App.
Nah, but if he, Cash App to Cash App, that would be lame. It needs to be an external wallet to prove a point.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
So while we're waiting for this, there's somebody in Ghana who has to be able to receive the Lightning payment and convert it to local currency. Who does that?
I forget if it's Bitnob or just a company, like an exchange.
But not. But it's somebody that the
Strike partner
merchant knows that they've if engaged with this or
not? No, the merchant doesn't need them. No, the merchant literally just receives money on the mobile payment mechanism that's local to that country.
Okay.
They don't have to know anything about Lightning Network.
Great.
I guess what's confusing about that?
All right. Yo, I got it. That worked. Matthew, what did you send that from?
Oh, from Canada.
Phoenix in Canada.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, dude, that's crazy. Border.
Yeah.
Bro. Wait, I got to know, though. I got 94 cents, 0.00001 BTC with zero fees. Is that correct? That's what you sent? There was no fee paid whatsoever?
He sent 500 Bitcoin.
Oh, bro. Shit, I'm going to start giving all my cash. All right,
man, let's go. We're going to make... This is how this show makes money.
I know. Value for
Alex,
value.
We need a big sign back here with a Bitcoin address.
And I'm also just going to throw out, a reminder, Alex and Ashi, we should chat about this later. You know, people are still trying to stream us money on Fountain and Oscar. You got to get that stuff set up. And now that I'm starting to get it coming in while we're on the show, I see the power of value for value. We got to follow up on that. But
yeah, so this is amazing and powerful, right?
Oh, good enough. Sure, let's go. All right. I like it.
Okay. Yeah, a 1 cent fee. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, should we keep diving into how that works or not?
It sounds like it's trivial.
It goes from strikes. In this specific case, I had Strike on my phone. I had a US dollar balance because I had connected Strike to a US bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I typed in the amount I wanted to pay in the local currency. And so I had to pick the local currency, and then I typed in the mobile phone number for that restaurant. That's all I had to type in, hit return, or, you know, hit the button.
Oh, shit.
Strike took dollars from my account.
Whoa.
Used an exchange partner of theirs to convert it to Bitcoin, sent it over the Lightning Network to an exchange in Ghana who they had partnered with.
Okay.
Yep. Who then converted it into local Ghana currency and sent it to this mobile phone number using their network and technology. And that's why the restaurant didn't know anything about it. So by the time it gets
from Strike to the local partner, that conversion then happens to the local partner and everything else works as is.
Yeah. So that existed 3 years ago.
That's all right. We don't need to read the last comment. We can do that. Thank y'all. I got a lot of y'all coming in now. This is guys, we should be doing this forever. And by the way, I agree with Matthew. We got to get Zapstream set up too. Like, this is, there's real potential here. We could fund the Presidio Bitcoin one day from value for value. That's my goal.
Yes.
All right. Miles is literally calling me right now. So I hope I didn't say something that I shouldn't have.
Don't do that.
Oh shit.
Okay. So,
So that was Lightning. Dollars on Lightning.
It's you. And a lot of people
A
lot of them are having the similar observation. A lot of people on social media are having a similar observation as Max, which is like, this might have been the biggest announcement of
ever.
I know Lalu thought it was, he actually called it the biggest announcement in Bitcoin's history, just that specific thing.
I agree.
This week.
Yeah. Matthew just demonstrated it, right? He's in Canada.
He just disrupted every payment network on the planet, bro.
Phoenix, and he sent a small amount of money.
And not just Matthew, bro. I've been getting Matthew.
So that's
Vinny, everybody.
That's Bitcoin, but you can also do dollars as well. Right?
Instant final settlement, not credit based.
I mean, not with Phoenix, but like Cash App can send dollars to, like, so you can send. You can have a dollar balance, send it to someone else with a Bitcoin wallet, and they receive Bitcoin. Right?
I mean, my big question is, not to go too deep in all this, but like, you know, let's use Western Union. Like, what the hell are the Western Unions of the world going to do? Are they going to embrace this or fight it or whatever? I mean, that's the real story we're going to see play.
What did Eastman Kodak do when Instagram came about?
It just died.
You can't necessarily always embrace it. You kind of sometimes have to play a new game.
Also announced by Cash App is stablecoin support.
Yeah, now what's going on with all of this?
So it's, I don't think it's available. I think they said it'll be available maybe in January or like coming soon.
On Solana.
Yeah, well, so we can talk, what time? Okay, we'll talk a little bit. There's still so much more to talk about like Bitcoin, but we'll touch on this. Let's see. Well, on Solana, like, okay.
It's got adoption, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, which...
People use it.
Which one would you pick, right? I mean, I can't. Well, I'll criticize any answer you have.
No, I get it. You know, like, I'm not saying it's the wrong move. It's probably the right
Ethereum or Base or Tron or Solana or Taproot Assets or Spark. I mean, there's all these options.
What about Spark?
We didn't even get it right when we announced it on the show. Like, it's using some dollar token that we weren't unaware of.
I think this should be a challenge.
I thought it was like the third or fourth ranked one, but it's one that like no one's even ever heard of.
I hear you, and I get you're the user. The user is on Solana. It's just for dollars. I'm not criticizing, but I do think that should be a challenge. If Lalu is listening or the homies at Spark, like, let's get that off Solana.
I have no doubt David Marcus is like working his ass off.
I know he is.
And to get Tether, USDC, et cetera. But even when they happen. Do, like, I'm more and more convinced Bitcoin's going to win at the payment game over stablecoins, because and we've talked about this show, but the fragmentation is going to be
fragmentation is
horrible.
A death knell. Yep.
And with Bitcoin, you get this amazing
internet of money, intranets.
Ubiquitous.
All
solution.
Day. All
so,
day.
So
I talked to a friend who was an exec at Visa and now spends a lot of time on stablecoins. And I happened to be on the phone with him yesterday, and he's just like, oh, he's like, yeah, the details of like Sol or Base or whatever, it's like, that doesn't matter. That's going away. Bridge and all these other, like, that's going to be solved. Like, so don't waste any time on it.
So I think there's a little bit of criticism over like choosing Solana. I think that's ridiculous. Like,
I don't think it's criticism. I think that's a challenge to us as Bitcoiners. If we want the internet of value, like, I don't view Solana as the long-term answer because it's an intranet. But
there's even there's a large segment of Bitcoiners who don't want stablecoins on Bitcoin.
Totally.
And there's valid reasons for that too. I don't have a strong position on it, but totally. I can definitely argue either side.
And I think in the short term, it makes sense to like, because it's a regulated institution to be able to market make between those. But like, one day I would like to see like there's instant swaps between dollar value. And maybe that's like, by the way, I was very impressed with Tony's presentation last night, thinking about doing sort of like stable coins. I almost call what he was doing was like using Lightning channels to create synthetic dollars, like a contracts for difference platform. I think that was really cool. And there's a lot of things we could experiment with here. But I think anything that is an intranet, one day you have to rely on a company to be there to market make on that. I would love to see that move into the internet.
But it may help to start with these like proprietary networks, as long as they don't get to be dominant. As long as there's a path where they're not going to be able to like, ultimately dominate the system, then great. Like, we needed AOL, or we didn't need, but like a lot of first experiences were CompuServe, Prodigy, AOL, before you had
AOL. Yeah, I agree.
The internet access very accessible to a lot of people.
So I think the interesting question is more like, well, Cash App just announced dollars and Lightning and also going to support stablecoins. Like, do those conflict or what? Why do both?
Yeah, why?
I think it's a good question. So let's talk about it. Yeah. To me, so the dollars and Lightning, that means you can pay any other wallet that supports Bolt 11 invoices in the future, Bolt 12. But like, Lightning payment protocol. That's a bunch of wallets.
When Bolt 69.
So the question is, how many wallets are out there that support USDC and Solana that don't support Lightning? That the size of that
sorry,
the size of that market is why Cash App should support USDC and Solana. And I don't know what the Venn diagram. I mean, there's a set of wallets that support USDC and Solana.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
What's totally fine?
Find to support
all the above, like wherever money is.
But it's an interesting discussion. So, imagine a circle of here's the size of all the users that support their wallet supports USDC on Solana. There's another circle, Lightning. There's other circles for the dozens, if not hundreds, of other combinations of stable coins. So, Cash App will support these two of these circles. They overlap to some extent. And I don't know how much they overlap in like
a lot.
Why support USDC on Solana if they overlap a lot? Because it already supports
Lightning. It's a good point. Yeah. So, okay, fair.
So I don't know the answer. But like I suspect there's, if you look at like Phantom and Trust Wallet and stuff like that, there's probably a bunch that do support USDC and Solana that do not support Lightning yet. So Cash App can now pay those wallets.
Yeah.
And receive from those wallets. But there's all these other circles with other stablecoin pairs that Cash App won't be interoperable with. And it's just kind of a disaster trying to support all of them. I mean, to your friend's point, I mean, that's why Bridge and others exist to try to like abstract that It's really hard to do for self-custody wallets. Easier for custodial, though. So we'll see how that plays out. But to the degree that Lightning payment protocol is broadly adopted, honestly, the stablecoin stuff can literally just go away. You can just like use regular dollars on TradFi, use Lightning Network to transport it.
I mean, I think the big thing is international too, right? Which Block is obviously still in the US for now, but eventually, if Block wants to move internationally, we've talked about some of the potential Bitcoin opens up for that. Maybe that's the reason.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about my own team and what Spiral did this week. I think what we did was, small, mighty team. Shout out to Haley, Ken, and Matt. And in some ways, what we did is small, but I think the ROI can be huge. So let me explain why I think it can have a huge ROI. So I already talked about a couple of components of it, but we felt it's very important that, number one, an asset that Bitcoin has that stablecoins and corporations don't have is the Bitcoin army, a rabid group of people who want to will Bitcoin in the world, including willing Bitcoin payments into the world. And we're already seeing that at Presidio Bitcoin. Numerous members here are out, convincing local merchants to accept Bitcoin, spending Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So, and we're seeing that worldwide. Look at BTC Map, it being populated just this week, right? So we have the Bitcoin army. Imagine like the Stripe Tempo army. There's not going to be a Stripe Tempo army unless Stripe pays people to do it, right? Yeah. So here, Bitcoin as a volunteer army.
I also think it's just worth pausing here. And like, this is something I wish I had said at the Silicon Valley, whatever, Startup Unite last night. Like, for all of you guys who have joined, the ranks of the Stripe Tempo army or the whatever blockchain is hot army, like, I know there's some short-term cash, but let me just tell you, you don't know how good it feels to be part of the mission. You know what I'm saying? Like, doesn't it feel just sweet? Like, just the juice you get from seeing someone join the revolution, be part of the squad. Like, no amount of money will ever satisfy that primal desire. It's not too late to join us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anyone in Bitcoin who's gone to a Bitcoin event feels that energy around the people that are at the event. Here at Presidio Bitcoin, we felt it for a year now. Yeah. Like, our community here continues to grow. We have like more than 24 members now that come in regularly. We have tons of visitors that flow through here. And we're all supportive of each other, even though everyone works for a different organization and has their own like vested interests and everything. But like the common bond is
converted from shitcoins too. Mm-hmm. It's like you can go the Stripe shitcoin path, which is the path of nihilism, or you can have meaning. Just trust me, come try the meaning.
So we have the Bitcoin army. One thing that anyone has tried to convert a merchant as I think we already mentioned, but like if you go in a merchant and say, like enable Bitcoin payments on Square, number one, they're often quite busy, right? They don't have time to talk to you, even if it's something simple like that. Two, you're often talking to someone who's not the owner or the decision maker, or even has the access to the Square UI to turn on Bitcoin payments. So you're often left in a situation where then you just have to like, you leave and you didn't really make any meaningful progress towards your goal of having them turn on Bitcoin payments. So we felt it was really important, we Spiral, that there is a high quality leave behind, like a sheet of paper with a clear, simple message that you can leave behind and say, hey, when you have time, please take a look at this, or can you please give this to the owner and have them look at it. So we created that. The message is simple. It focuses on the fees. We already talked about that, but it doesn't. Bitcoiners might not instinctively realize this, but don't talk about censorship resistance or any of the seven qualities of money in the history of money, and merchants don't care about
that. But have you heard about the creature from Jekyll Island?
They'll eventually go on the Bitcoin.
What happened in 1971?
Yeah, what was that in 1971?
Oh, right. They'll eventually
Andrew
go on that
Jackson
journey.
Was right.
But what they care about today is fees. So this one pager focuses on that. Yeah. Very simple.
Figure out the audience.
There's two versions of this one pager. One is like pretty standard. Anyone can use. The other has is like plushy and like itty bitty inspired, this character. So if you like the character, you think that's a fun, cute way to strike up a conversation, you go that path. If you think it's weird and it's not for you, or you don't think it's going to be for the merchant, that's cool too. We have a more standard version, but we have both of those one pagers freely available to download off the website. bitcoinmerchantcommunity.org and print out, do-it-yourself printout and use. We also have printed out on really high quality paper stock.
And it's orange, which is nice.
In orange, although I'll get into some snafus with launch, but like orange, and we're distributing that to six different hubs around the US, like Bitcoin hubs. Austin, Nashville, Atlanta, Denver, here at Presidio Bitcoin, and then Kansas City came.
Kansas.
Well, Kansas City, Kansas. Came, like the people from Kansas City are like, we want this too.
Where's New York?
New York doesn't support, Square doesn't support it.
For real?
Probably BitLicense and stuff.
Yeah.
Dude. New York is
not allowed. It's not allowed to.
Yeah. That's wild. Okay.
People from Kansas City rose up. They have a guerrilla army of 10 people ready to hit the street. So we're going to send them not only the one pagers, but we're also sending them plushies.
If I want to like proselytize, I can come to Presidio Bitcoin, grab a stack of these things, just go out to merchants, start hand them out and telling them about it.
Yep. We had an event last night. A bunch of people came and I handed out these one pagers and plushies to four different people. And I had conversations with them. They all seemed like they're genuinely going to go out and try to convert merchants. And I was happy to. Yeah,
do they have to choose? I'm getting the serious one or the party one?
I think we've only printed out the plushy one, the itty bitty one for the hubs.
Got it.
Yeah. So we printed on orange paper, but then we had this hiccup with the domain, which we talked about at the beginning of the show. So don't hand those out yet because the domain doesn't work. So then we had to print out new ones with the alternative domain, the one that is live. This orange paper is not in stock. It takes days to get it printed because it has to be ordered.
Hard.
Adams,
man.
Haley has spent a lot of time working with printers this week. So now the hubs have white paper stock because we could get to them right away. But on Monday, they should be receiving the updated orange that has the new URL.
Right on.
So yeah, if you are in any of those six cities I mentioned, you can reach out to your local Bitcoin hub. If you're in Kansas City, I think he'll be okay with me saying who it is. But the founder of Mana Wallet, M-A-N-N-A, his name's Adam.
Oh, that's a good name. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, and he I think he's rallying the troops there. So you can reach out to him. Go to your local hub if you happen to be in the area. And if you show yourself as like eager and willing to go get some merchants to accept Bitcoin, you'll get, a plushie, some one pagers, and some instructions on like how to go about guidance or best practices for how to go about approaching it.
Is Miles still slinging 25 bucks?
Yeah, I don't know if he's discontinued that. So
that's an interesting thing. Yeah.
So, sticking to what Spiral's doing, that's what Spiral's doing. We're already receiving feedback from people doing this, the good, bad, and ugly. And there's like huge successes so far, but there's also a ton of learnings that we want to share with others. So we are in the midst of trying to figure out creating a community, some kind of discussion forum so that people can share that feedback and others can learn from it. And so we're trying to figure out which tool to use, and is this a centrally controlled, like does Spiral create this and then there's different channels for different regions, or is it more distributed? I think you recommended Stacker News maybe.
Yeah, we should definitely
or Discord.
Yeah, definitely Stacker News or Discord. I mean, support the homies. We'll see.
Maybe, I don't know.
Or a Noster solution.
Yeah, but that's got to be built.
So we need to figure that. I think that's important because people want to give feedback and people want to learn from that. We also created a Facebook group, somewhat to my chagrin, because I haven't used Facebook for a decade. But it's actually super smart because where are small businesses globally?
Facebook and WhatsApp.
They're on Facebook, right? So it's
and WhatsApp.
Like I know Darth Coin and Sacra News thought we're total idiots. He thought our one pager was horrible copy. He thought the Facebook group was stupid. I don't think he knows what he's talking about.
Well, Darth Coin is not there for comic relief.
He's not living in the real world.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's living in his real world, which I give him respect for, but yeah.
But the Facebook group, I mean, there's already like almost 100 merchants. But the Facebook group, the intention is merchant. It's a merchant community. So it's not like the Bitcoin army.
Right.
It's intended for merchants. And so we seeded it with like Pink Owl and Compass Coffee and a bunch of other merchants who already know, they've already been through this, already using Bitcoin. They know it and they can help answer questions. And then new merchants can go there and ask, you know, newbie questions and basic questions. And we also, Joe Wood is a CPA and a Bitcoiner out of Nashville. He's actually the CPA for Presidio Bitcoin.
Oh.
And the Bitcoin Design Kit Foundation. That's how I know him, because he basically is a hardcore Bitcoiner. He wants to help out other Bitcoin efforts, and he's a CPA. And he started a practice, and I think he has like a firm now, basically. I mean, he has like many people. I think he's had 10 people. I don't know. Like, he has... So he's engaged in this Facebook group because merchants are going to have tax questions too. So that's awesome to have him there as a resource, and hopefully other CPAs who are Bitcoin knowledgeable and savvy join and can help out as well.
So just another plug for why we should do the so yes, Facebook for the normie merchants makes total sense to me. Stacker News or something like that, but I don't see anything like it. So frankly, Stacker News for instead of Discord, like, it's so easy. Like, imagine that's where the Bitcoiners are. And you can just, like, in real time, let's say Miles wants to do another, or we want to do, or whoever wants to come out and do their own bounty. Maybe there's a whale who says, I'm going to put up $1 million in cash, and I'm just going to like start slinging it. They can just zap people directly on there. So if I come, all I have to do is post a photo or a video of me doing it, boom, zap, 25,000 sats.
Could be Nostra too, though.
There's could Bitcoin be, but like that. There. I mean, if someone builds it, we've been asking for someone to build this for three years.
Just use Nostra.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay.
Like, and
Nostra
like,
or Stacker
meaning,
News.
And meaning like, you know, we can socialize like a hashtag or something.
Yeah.
Something that ties it together.
Yeah. Either way is fine with me, but like, I think something where it's tied to Bitcoin, because then you can see the interplay of media and money.
Yeah. I agree with that. And because that audience is the Bitcoin army, it can be something like Stacker News or Nostra.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So another way to frame what Spiral did, we created two marketing kits. There's a marketing kit for the Bitcoin army, which is the one pager and the plushie, leave behind, and just some guidance on how to go about it. And we'll keep, this is an open source project. Like, this, I don't want this to be like Spiral exclusive or Spiral only. Like, we want other contributors to help out. And with this, the Bitcoin army, whatever form we choose, we're going to learn from that as well. I've already learned a ton from D++ and Bob, who have been going out doing this, as well as my own firsthand examples.
And if people are not,
we're going to keep learning, and we'll keep iterating on that.
If people are not near one of the hubs where the material can be distributed, is there any way to get involved? Or you just like wait for now?
No. This is global availability.
You print it yourself.
You have to do it yourself. Print it. Just print it out.
So okay.
And so like I think if you have the resources to print it out on a higher quality paper and a better stock of paper, I think that's what we chose to do for the hubs. That's what you do if you're not near one of the hubs.
Okay, so a couple questions. One question is, I only for the first time ever last night really got to see how a Square terminal works from the back end. Is there a stupid simple video like 30 seconds where I say,
oh yeah,
I'm about to, so I'll give you my example. I want to convert my tea ladies.
Yep.
I'm going to do that.
Yep.
Now, I want to go, I've never seen Square from the back end. Is there a video where I can just go and watch like different examples? Because there's different operating systems, whatever. It's just like, I'm going to walk you like I'm a 5-year-old through what do I need to click?
I know Square's produced at least one video that does a pretty good job, but does skip some details.
Like the
KYB stuff, I don't think is in that video. I think maybe they're creating a new one. I don't know. But then there's also different Square. I learned there's like 5 different apps in the App Store from Square. And apparently there's some meta Square app that combines them all, but there's still all the, you know, there's an appointments one and this and that. Well, there's so many options.
It doesn't even like, need to come from Square. I would love, Bob, if you're listening to this right now, if you could just take a video while you're converting your merchants and just show like, hey guys, we're doing this live in real time. Maybe somebody can do this on Zapstream and do the, you know, the Zap bomb, but like, this is the exact button. If you get this error, click this. Just like, assume I'm 5.
Maybe. I mean, like when they're typing in beneficiary data, you might not want that public and stuff. So, but I agree with the general theme, and then you have to address them like,
maybe somebody should make the video how to save 3% on your payment as a Square merchant.
I love that. Yeah. One other thing I want to throw out, because I think this is a really important and good idea, and I know that many startups that I have funded are doing, let's say, Bitcoin banking and services in emerging markets. So places like Mexico, El Salvador, Brazil, Philippines, et cetera, Vietnam. One thing that I would love to see someone do, eventually Square is going to do this themselves, I'm sure, but like that takes time, is to Steve's point, and you could even do this in the US, right? Like, you know, you guys are startups and that means you have limited resources compared to a massive public company. But Square already has, I believe you've said, a version of their software, which is currently available for all the back-end stuff, the accounting and like whatever the bookkeeping you have, but you can't accept payments. If I were building right now a startup and I wanted to do this in an emerging market, I would be figuring out how can I take whatever Square has built and figure out how to plug that into an easy to use Bitcoin acceptance. And eventually Square will do this themselves. But like in the meantime, how do I make all of the accounting that I need for the Bitcoin Pay, whatever it's BTC Pay server, or whatever product I'm using, just like seamlessly integrate or as seamlessly as possible with Square? That's what I would do. And I would love to see some of you guys do that.
Or even for the Clovers and Toasts of the
world. Yeah, why Square? Why integrate with Square?
Because I'm assuming Square, I mean, probably has the best UI UX. So I'm just thinking, here's the example I'm thinking. I'm a merchant in Mexico. I can use like the kind of like jank, normal, whatever they use, Clip, that's very, but it's kind of hood Square. But imagine if I'm a startup, like for example, maybe like Yopaki or some of these guys are listening to this and they could say, hey, I know they were already thinking about doing like a point of sale solution, or IBEX, they have a point of sale solution. Instead of trying to rebuild the wheel and compete with Square on like probably software that's frankly just much better than what I can do as a startup, I would say, how can I take all of the accounting and backend stuff from Square's free version and try and plug that as easily as possible? And on Square's end, it'd be awesome if that was open source. I don't know if they would do that, but
Square's backend system stuff isn't available to the guy in Mexico.
I thought you said there was a version of Square.
Well, there's Register World.
What's it called?
I think called Register World.
Okay.
It was launched like, I had worked at the company for like 4 years and had never heard of it, but it launched like 10 years ago or something. I think people in Mexico do use it, it doesn't have any of the regulated type TradFi stuff.
Great.
I think it does have some or all of the backend stuff.
So that's my point, is like, I've never even heard of Register World. Square team, maybe it's a chance to like pump this idea out there, because all the other Bitcoin merchants in their own local communities can start plugging those together. And if you open source it, all the better.
Yeah. I think it's definitely been discussed and thought of. Like, I mean, there's definitely interest from Square to go international.
Totally.
One approach is to take Register World and like a sidecar approach where any Bitcoin wallet can be used. Bring your own Bitcoin wallet.
Exactly. Right?
It avoids all regulatory issues, at least for Block, and it gives merchants choice. It also means merchants have to choose and go to the effort. But I think that's a very reasonable approach.
Totally. But my point is, don't wait for Square. Like, Square does it, amazing. But like, if I'm a startup,
I don't know what kind of APIs are available. You're saying integrate. I don't know if that's available. So, if it's available, then I totally agree. Startups should go do that. If the APIs aren't there, then how are you going
to do it? So two thoughts. One, my request would be, it'd be awesome if Square is able to just open source and or like have their APIs be as open as possible for that. If for whatever reason they can't do that, then if I'm a startup, you can still hack things together on the back end, right? So you could like whatever, scrape the CSV file, merge them together. I don't know exactly how that would work, but if I'm a startup, that's kind of my like my niche in that I would do.
Yeah, I think that should be explored for sure. I agree.
Request for psychopaths.
But just wrapping up the Spiral stuff. So there's a marketing kit for the Bitcoin army. There also will be a marketing kit for merchants as well.
We can address comments in a minute.
Okay. The marketing kit for... Okay, let's talk. Let's address the comments here.
There's a bunch of stuff going on there.
Well, Matthew, I'm with you. You said people own printers. That was kind of like my... I'm like...
Dude, I actually thought about buying a printer yesterday. No, I wanted one. Because now... No, there's all these different things you want.
There's
no printer that's good.
No. I want a printer. I'm going to take the contrarian opinion on this. Like, okay. I would love to be able to...
Printers are the future.
Yeah, to print... Printers are the future, just like LinkedIn is the future. Like, in the same way, I want to be able to print my own stuff to share or modify. Like, I actually, so for part of my experiments of phoneless living, which is not going as well as I would like, one thing I'm thinking of is like, I would love to go back, imagine the year is 2000 again. And like, you remember when you used to like print a map from Yahoo Maps? Yeah. I want to do that.
MapQuest.
That's what I used. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the second thing Spiral is doing is the merchant marketing kit. That's not available yet, but we're going to produce that. And that's, I think there's less urgency there because like most of the merchants, step one is to get merchants to turn it on. Most merchants are not Pink Owl yet, right? But they'll eventually become like Pink Owl, where they're savvy about Bitcoin. They realize they need to promote it and want to promote it, and they'll want like a playbook, right? So we're gonna the merchant marketing kit will be a playbook for like what you can do to be successful with your with reducing fees, right? And that's where like display the plushie or just other things to create awareness of spending Bitcoin. So that's what Spiral did this week.
Great.
Boring week. Nothing going on.
So this was the biggest week ever in Bitcoin. Talked about a bunch of the announcements. We are at 120, so we only have maybe 10-ish minutes left.
We talked about what we wanted to talk about last week, but we didn't have a regular PBJ.
Yeah. We'll let you kick this one off, DK.
Well, okay. This is a topic, this topic of lava, right? There's this category of innovation that we've been, I think, all looking for and excited about for a while, which is how can you take and build a collateralized lending on Bitcoin? And we had met Shazan, what was it? I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Long time.
And he was like, oh, I think I have a way to do non-custodial collateralized lending on Bitcoin. So
that a Freudian slip?
He didn't, he said non-custodial.
All right.
With DLCs. and that's something I was excited about. I continue to be excited about.
Can we actually pause for one second before we jump into the specifics? So there's a question I want to ask you, DK. I have, in my whole time of knowing you, only seen you get radically excited about a few ideas. One of these ideas is non-custodial lending. So we talked about last night what sort of categories of Bitcoin businesses have made money. There's no question the biggest is exchange, right? Coinbase is the biggest winner by far. Kraken's up there, a few others. You have said repeatedly, someone who executes non-custodial lending correctly at scale could be at least a Coinbase-sized business. Why do you feel so strongly that this is such a powerful wedge and business opportunity?
Well, I think collateralized lending of Bitcoin is the Coinbase scale opportunity I'm talking about. And there's an infinite design space that you could explore there. So I'm not saying it has to be done in a specific way. I'm saying people own this asset. This asset has increased in value a lot. And a lot of people don't want to sell an asset that has increased in value because they have to then pay capital gains on it. And we expect the network value of Bitcoin to 10x or 100x from here over the next years and decades. So I think it's natural that as that is happening, and in traditional, like people collateralize their homes and get mortgages, and people collateralize stocks and get lines of credit. There's all kinds of collateralized lending in the world, but there's this huge asset that's going to grow much, much bigger, and people are going to want to do collateralized lending on it. And so the question is, how is that going to be ushered into the world? Will it be via custodial solutions, non-custodial solutions? Will it be lines of credit? What will be loan terms? Will it be something to do with the way it interplays with like a mortgage solution?
All of the above.
I think all of the above is the right answer. So I'm not singling out non-custodial is the only opportunity in this category. That's going to be the massive winner and everybody else is going to fail. I think there's lots of different solutions.
Do you think the biggest winner in lending, collateralized lending, however it is, ultimately is a bigger opportunity than exchange? Like, i.e., the biggest company that comes out of this space is a bigger company than Coinbase.
Yes, I think so.
Yes, for me.
Yeah, I think so, because if you can do it in a non-custodial way, the entire market is your market. From day one, you don't have to mess with all the regulatory hurdles that you have to when you actually take custody of Bitcoin.
Also, I think if we fast forward 10, 20 years, whatever it is, I mean, quite a bit in the future, Bitcoin will just be ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And it'll be the ultimate collateral in the world, better than any other asset for collateral. And in terms of exchanges, like the exchanges, they're profitable because of the casino. And I'm not saying casinos are going away.
River is profitable too, I believe. Well,
yeah, but tiny compared to Coinbase, though, right? I mean, we love River. We're investors in River, and we love Alex, but like, it's not a Coinbase size opportunity because they're not a casino. I think River has great long term potential as well. But to date, the money's been in the casino. I'm not predicting casinos go away. In fact, casinos are going to exist
casinos
in 20 years.
Human nature.
Casinos are human nature. They're going to keep existing, but the size of the opportunity, like the size of the casino in 20 years compared to the whole world adopting Bitcoin, Bitcoin standard, Bitcoin's ultimate collateral in the world, that market is going to grow orders of magnitude and be way bigger.
And it's like Alex always says, you could either build JP Morgan or you could build Caesar's Palace. Coinbase built Caesar's Palace. He's trying to build JP Morgan.
Yeah.
One question on that, though, and I'm curious for both of you guys. Do you think, though, if we really get to the Bitcoin standard world, so in a world where there's this intermediate step where the state still exists and all these other reasons for collateralized lending, I agree with you. And maybe that's the case for the next 10, 20 years. As you really zoom out, and I don't even know, it's like, it's a challenge to get timelines here, but like, does that opportunity still exist in the far future? Or are we just one day, it's like, nah, like everything's Bitcoin. There's only Bitcoin. There's no like...
You're saying, does the lending opportunity still
exist? Yeah, like imagine where like that opportunity exists because of regulatory arbitrage. I'm saying if we get to a world that's a lot more sovereign individual and like everyone's just Bitcoin for everything, like...
But you have a hyper-Bitcoinization. There is no more fiat.
Yeah, we're fiat.
Well, then obviously there's no more market to like get a dollar loan for Bitcoin.
Exactly.
So obviously that goes away.
But everything else changes too. Like, what does the state look like? How does taxation work? How do other assets work?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
I mean, we've talked a little bit about that. I think it's an interesting conversation, but that's long, long term.
Yeah.
And like for the next 20 years, there's this enormous business opportunity, which I think this high probability, very high probability, this plays out.
Yeah.
The whole hyper-Bitcoinization, I would assign a much lower probability. At least, I mean,
depends on your timeline.
It depends on your timeline.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it could be that there's a new type of credit. I mean, kind of like what MicroStrategy is doing with digital credit. There could be a new type of digital credit that emerges. It's sort of like
insurance
auxiliary
companies
to the hyper-Bitcoinization Bitcoin asset that everybody holds. And I think it's hard to predict exactly how that's going to play out. So it's like it's kind of fascinating to explore, but that's. In a sense, like,
and I'll just add there, I think for people that are thinking about startup opportunities, this is a really good direct sort of wedge to get in. But I'm also very interested in hearing about what does credit, we talked a little bit about this, but look like in the Bitcoin standard. I know Tuur DeMeester and some other people have been thinking a lot about what Bitcoin and insurance, how those markets are going to fuse in the future. I think there's probably a lot of opportunity to be thinking.
If you believe in hyper-Bitcoinization future, then you also probably believe that holding that asset should increase as the percent of GDP. It is growth, right?
For sure.
So if you know that it's going to grow and everybody else knows it's going to grow, maybe there's a new type of synthetic thing where you're like, I'm not selling it, but I'm going to capture the gains and you're going to let me spend.
Well, I think it also changes human nature because like people are always like, oh, a deflationary economy will never work. It's like, well, you bought a phone. You know, the phone's going to be better.
Let me bring this back in though.
Because
The news of the past week and a half has been lava.
Yes.
Major crisis. And we're not talking about lava anymore. We can talk about the market, but the TLDR,
we need to address it.
4 years ago, we all thought this is a big market, like convicted on what we just said.
Yep.
I think we still feel this way. There'll be many different solutions. We all agree on that. We all met Shazan, I think independently, or I forget who,
around
like how we got
time.
Connected, but at the same time, we all invested in Lava. And it felt like a great investment because like we big opportunity. And this is also right around the time like when BlockFi was blowing up and all these custodial services.
Yep.
So like this self-custody approach was novel and compelling. Using DLC or discrete log contract technology was quite interesting and compelling.
Definitely.
It had only been partially proven out, like Atomic Finance and a few startups had used it with mild usage, I believe. So proved it out to a certain extent, but no one had and still has proven out DLC technology, which for those not familiar with it, just think of it as like advanced smart contracts for Bitcoin.
Where you can basically
use a loan.
Yeah.
You can do loans with DLC. So,
And the TLDR without getting too into the weeds is just imagine you like take a bet or like whatever, have some position and you say there's an oracle that's going to come and like the only way that this contract gets settled or liquidated is if some condition is met by the external oracle. There's always been, to be clear, the issue of like, well, who controls the oracle? That's a point of attack.
In a typical case, the oracle is saying, what is the price of Bitcoin in dollars or something like that?
Or who won the sports match or whatever.
And Lava did some innovation around how to do blind oracles. The oracle that's reporting doesn't know which contracts it's resolving.
I'm not aware of that, but
okay.
No, that's just how DLCs work.
Okay.
Tahoe Tarajah invented DLCs, and that's an inherent property in how DLCs work.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they got that benefit, but anyone using DLCs gets that benefit. So, I have been excited about Lava because the huge market opportunity. the use of DLC. So the tech nerd in me and wanting to show or see how more advanced smart contracts could play out in Bitcoin yeah. and actually create products that work, scale, are secure. Because
yeah.
until someone actually does it, you can like academically understand it, but like, let's see it for real. So I was excited to see that play out.
I was also excited as an investor. I mean, you know, Shazan, who we met, like obviously has been very successful in selling the vision, has been very successful at fundraising. Very few companies in the Bitcoin ecosystem have been able to break out traditional venture capital. He raised a Series A from Founders Fund and Kosla. That was extremely exciting for me to see, hey, traditional Silicon Valley sees the opportunity in him. They see the opportunity in collateralized lending. Looks like we're finally bridging that gap. So that was the reason I was excited.
Yep. Yeah. And like we've talked about Lava before. We talked about other solutions. We have been Lava supporters and excited for Lava. I've like a year or so ago, I took out some Lava just as an experiment, took out some Lava yep. loans, toy money, nothing okay. real, just to see how it works. Gave Shazan some UX feedback, product feedback, but I could see how it was very compelling. Like I didn't have to KYC. I was able to get a loan instantly. And keep self-custody of my Bitcoin. And then I had dollars and I could literally deposit them in Wells Fargo Bank.
You have to KYC to do that though, right?
I had to KYC yes. to do that. I also transferred to
I
transferred to Phantom
yep.
and didn't have to KYC. Right. So if you want to be KYC free, you can, you take out the loan, instant loan. I mean, you deposit your Bitcoin in Lava. You get this instant loan. You then transfer the dollars to Phantom and then do whatever you want with
stable coins quickly. So to be clear, you have the option of no KYC, you get stable coins, or KYC, you can get stable coins.
You get stable coins, yeah. and then you can choose to off-ramp it to bank dollars, yeah. but that requires KYC, or you can choose to off-ramp it.
And I should know, I also did one of these loans, not exactly trivial. I really wanted to like put my money where my mouth is and see if it worked. It worked. To be clear, there were some issues with the app not sending me notifications, not an issue with the core product. I've been working through the team with them on that. But
I never saw
the
Lambo.
not that big of a loan ticket. Not all of us are finding the 10 million Bitcoin in our couch.
So I found I had my UX nits, but the core product I found quite compelling a year ago. Now there are still reasons then that I wouldn't use it for real. One is that the Oracle, it was designed to have multiple oracles, but it was only using just Lava as the Oracle.
Right.
So that really made it trusted. You're completely trusting Lava then. But I was just, I'm like, they're a startup. It's a startup. You got to prioritize. And eventually, like, they'd have like Coinbase and Block and River and like major institutions as oracles. And then like, right. they all have to agree. And like, then it's a pretty tight solution, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A second reason I wouldn't use it for real is that the only way you could custody your Bitcoin is to store it in Lava on iPhone. Right. And Shazan was adamant that that's the most secure way to store Bitcoin. And, I agree with a lot of his sentiment on iOS security, but I do not agree that's the best way, the most secure way to store Bitcoin. And independent of who's right about what's the most secure way, what I do know is everyone has different solutions they're using. Yeah.
Different people have different needs, and we all push
super hard for bring your own
custody. Bring your own custody.
Yeah,
all of
us agree on
DK pushed that the most, but we all pushed for it. I think that would have been a much superior, like if you're going to support self-custody, that's a far superior product and it would be beautiful. Like if I had used cold storage with Ledger or Trezor or BitKey or whatever, they could all integrate and support DLCs. And then it would just, you don't have to move your Bitcoin out of your BitKey or your cold card or whatever. That would be awesome.
That would.
Now, but that's another reason why I wouldn't have, put like $100,000 of Bitcoin or something on my iPhone.
I didn't do that either, to be clear.
So there are reasons I wouldn't use it for real.
Yeah.
But then, okay, why is there drama the past week and a half? Lo and behold, they completely changed their product from self-custody to custodial. None of us were aware of that. It took everyone by surprise. And so that's a huge shift. So, I think things we should talk about. What do we think about that move? And then one thing I want to talk about is like communications, because my biggest criticism and concern, right, and yeah, I think I would call failure, is communications.
Yeah.
So I want to speak to that. But maybe let's first talk about why do we, because we don't, despite having many private conversations with Shazan, and we also have like read what he's written publicly, we still don't really know the reasons for switching. He's talked about vulnerabilities in DLCs.
Mm-hmm.
He's said that custodial, or that non-custodial is just as trusted, or it's as, you know, it's trusted. Custodial's trusted. They're all sort of the same thing.
Jens, I want to participate in this conversation. I have to pee like crazy. I'll be right back. Give me 2 seconds.
I think that's all. I think that's all. Anyway. To me, and I think one thing we'll talk about is like the customer base. Who's the customer base? And maybe they don't care.
Right.
Like, so if the customer base for this product isn't already self-custodying and they don't want the burden of self-custodying, then that could be a very valid reason to switch to custodial. Because if your customers who want to use the product don't self-custody and consider it a barrier to start self-custodying, I think that's a completely rational business and product decision. But then just communicate that.
Right.
And I haven't heard those words. Instead, things like, oh, non-custodial, custodial, they're the same thing. DLCs have security vulnerabilities. And like, I still do not understand, despite him trying to communicate it to me, I still do not know what those problems are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that your advice to Shazan to improve communication is good advice to him. I will say that, you know, startups are messy and it's challenging when you're building something new. There's lots of constituents that you have to incorporate their needs into what you're doing, and their needs might have conflicts. So, you know, when you think about there are customers, there are investors he's committed things to, there are partners that he has, like maybe this new credit line that was just announced. I think it was a $200 million liquidity line that is going to fund the loans.
Well, I think like a portion of like 15 or so mil was equity, and but yeah, close.
But, there's I'm just saying there's different constituents who have different expectations of what you're doing, and in, you know, I don't know the terms of that, but that might not be something that you can publicly talk about according to the terms of the thing. For example, and maybe they didn't want to provide the 200 million without a centralized service. So I'm not here to say that everything he did was right. But I do think it's a complex environment that he's operating in, and he's trying to find the right trade-offs.
Let's get into things that I think are unequivocally should have been done communication-wise. Different categories.
Yeah.
So one is in product. So when I opened Lava app, it basically said it's going to convert me. All right, I took
upgrade.
I mean, I took a screenshot so I can look up the actual word, but. And then, you know, I pressed the button and then it upgraded me. There was no mention of the product is no longer self-custody. It's now custodial. There's no discussion, no mention of that at all.
Wait,
no,
so
I was not informed of that.
Is that so Shazan told me that because my loan for a variety of reasons was not active when this shift happened, that you were told that things were going to be shifted from custodial, from non-custodial to custodial. I don't know if that was via email, which I never received emails either. So maybe you guys got emails, maybe you didn't. But this was the point I was trying to push Shazan on. And Shazan, if you're listening, this is extremely important point.
Here,
when you shifted, what did the screen say?
It has a Lava logo. It says Lava. Please update your app. Lava's latest version is here. Please update it now.
That's not cool.
And then there's a button that says update app now. That's literally all it says.
Yeah, that to me is like, that's so unacceptable.
It's unacceptable.
And unacceptable.
Horrible communication for their customer base. It should have been explained.
You get an email?
He says emails were sent out. I did not get an email.
Did you get an email?
I checked my spam folder. I did not get an email.
I don't think I did.
He says it's because I was an early user. It could be true.
Could be true.
Maybe we were early users. We're not in the email list and everyone else was. Maybe. I don't know. But I did not get an email. So very bad communication there. And then when I upgraded, I tapped the button upgrade and then it showed my balances. They were all zero. So, and I had both Bitcoin and dollars in the wallet.
I had that too.
So it said zero.
Hey, when I had that too.
So then I'm like, what in the world? Did I get rugged? Did my money get stolen? So I chatted with him, and to his credit, he took the time. He's very busy.
They've all taken the time to help us. Yeah.
So give him their credit. Shazan's credit, he took the time to help guide me there. I still had my seed phrase. So I took that and imported it into Blue Wallet. And mm-hmm. lo and behold, there was my Bitcoin balance. And then I transferred it to another wallet and the Bitcoin network worked and it was real and it was authentic. Good. So it really was self-custodied Bitcoin. And I got my Bitcoin back. And then, but then I still didn't have my Solana dollars or whatever, my USDC dollars. So I took my seed words and I imported it into Phantom thinking, I don't really know how, I mean, I know how this stuff. I know how the HD wallet can support other.
I've never been to the casino,
but I've never imported a wallet into
just for the free drinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Phantom that way, but I did that, and it did not show me my US dollar balance. I didn't know if it was or not, but it didn't. Didn't surprise me that it didn't. But I still had the question: how do I access my dollars? And then Shazan pointed me to a test flight with the old version or another version of Lava. I installed that and then it still showed zero, but then it showed, then it eventually showed my, somehow it showed my dollar balance and I have my dollars back. So
what
the TLDR
dollars?
Is none of my money was taken or stolen. I had all my money, but it was not a pleasant experience. It wasn't a good upgrade experience, but actually my biggest criticism of the product UI itself is that it did not explain the self-custody to custodial shift.
Yep.
And that's not just some like detail. It's not like, maybe some customers don't care about that, but there are definitely customers who, the whole reason they started using Lava was the narrative.
Including
like,
all of
Shazan,
us.
Shazan, including us as investors and users, but like to go back and look at all of Lava's communications and Shazan's communications for years, it's been all about self-custody. Don't trust BlockFi and all these custodians. Yeah, yeah. Self-custody. So that's the narrative. It's a super important one. It's totally fine if a business decides to shift. You got to communicate it.
Yeah.
So the in-product communication, horrible, should have been done better.
Yeah.
Should be a lesson learned. And then two, like the DLCs, this technology. He's saying it has critical vulnerabilities, security vulnerabilities. Like he's saying things that I don't think are true. I don't know though. I'd like to understand. Like he's saying that the oracles can equivocate. Like the whole point of DLCs is that oracles cannot equivocate.
But what do you mean? What does it mean to equivocate?
So with the hallmark of DLCs, one is that their privacy is preserved, and two, they can't equivocate. So if you're the oracle and you're saying the price of Bitcoin is $95,000 or whatever, you publish that as a signature for the world, and every smart contract that happens to be using you as the oracle then uses that, but you don't know which smart contracts are using it.
Got it.
So yeah, you can't like tell mine that it's 95,000 and his contract that it's 100,000. You can't equivocate. So you can be wrong or lie, but it applies to everyone.
Interesting.
Right? But I don't know. I don't understand the DLC vulnerabilities. All I'll say is it wouldn't surprise me if Lava, the company, has discovered DLC drawbacks. Maybe it doesn't work well with the line of credit product that he just launched. In fact, some DLC engineers have told me separately that it doesn't work well for the line of credit product. That doesn't surprise me. I'm not aware of any of these vulnerabilities, but that should be, it would first of all, just be a kind gesture to the DLC developer community. Mm-hmm. Saying like, here's what didn't work. Here are some and if the vulnerabilities are like putting people's money at risk, that should be responsibly disclosed.
Right.
So whether it's responsibly disclosed or publicly disclosed, whatever is appropriate, that would be a kind gesture, but also help with Lava's PR. That wasn't done either. Then there's communication to just like on social media on X, like he's getting blown up. Lava's getting blown up. Lots of hate. Everyone's hating them. It is bred distrust. Like no one on social media right now trusts Shazan or Lava. That's very bad if you're going to, I mean, for any business, but let alone one that is now going to custody your Bitcoin.
Right.
You want to have a trust. You want to be trusted, right?
Yeah.
And you gain trust by good, proper communications.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I mean, like I spoke a little bit with Shazan on this stuff, and I think, you know, I don't understand the DLC stuff too. I would love to hear from people like Taj or people that actually are deep in DLC world, or as well, there's other engineers. Perhaps that would be interesting for them to all have a public discussion and talk about like, what are the drawbacks of DLCs? Is this something we can fix moving forward? Because I still want DLCs to work. I will say, you know, one of Shazan's points, I think is like a fair business point, which is that most people don't care and the big money doesn't care. And I think that's probably right for a lot of, what we've seen. That's why BlockFi got to be a big business. That's why Three Arrows got to be a big business. And all of those companies blew up. So in my mind, he's right. Everything you said, he may or may not be right. But like, regardless, even 95% of users don't care. There's at least three users here who did care. There's a lot more people that do care. You can't just like make that shift. Yeah.
One of the comments here, which is a good one, is like probably, what should have happened or maybe a better decision is like this, just winding down the Lava, like creating a new brand. I mean, it could be the same company, but create a new brand, a new product, introduce that, and then just sunset Lava. That would have been a way better approach, I think. And then also, part of the public communication should be like, here is why we're making this. I know for the last 4 years, I've been saying self-custody, but here's what we learned, right? We learned that we still believe it's a huge market.
I would like to see this essay still. Shazana, if you're listening, write this essay.
Please. We still believe it's a huge market.
Yeah.
That's why we raised a lot of money sort of demonstrating that others believe it's a huge market. Two, self-custody, like our customer base that we've learned about, they don't care about self-custody and they don't want to self-custody. It's limiting us as a business. I'm just speculating, by the way, but like I can find that to be plausible. And then three, also DLC technology, it didn't work out for these reasons, line of credit or whatever, just explain that. So we're shifting to custodial because that's where we think the product market fit's going to be. And then at least it's a plausible, reasonable business and product story. And there's still going to be some Bitcoiners who hate on it because it's self-custody or the highway. But at least for everyone else who's a little more pragmatic, understands what this is, as opposed to when you don't communicate, all that happens is speculation. And a lot of the speculation is like, I mean, people are like showing pictures of Sam Bankman-Fried and Shazan in a tweet. That's horrible.
Right.
That's horrible PR. And it's horrible for Shazan. Like, so I think the communication should be much, much better. But maybe, I mean, we're way over, but maybe we should try to do our best to speculate why did this shift occur? Why is it still going to be a successful business? I guess one could be that the around the custody, like the customers simply don't want to do it, right? Okay, I find that could be plausible. And then two, maybe around raising all this money, maybe they required that it be like the Bitcoin's held with qualified custodians versus self-custody, where people, it's like less tested. It's people could lose their Bitcoin because they don't practice good, have good practices.
Yeah.
DLC is unproven technology. Maybe there's reasons why the lenders didn't want to lend $200 million.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all fair speculation. I don't really think it's our place to speculate. I think, Shazan, if you're listening, you should like explain all this in an essay or a video.
If you'd like to read the essay, watch the video, we'd obviously be happy to.
I mean, I think the reality of the situation, one thing that we do know is that for better or for worse, and I think this is true from what I've seen with, certain like multi-sig, companies like, Unchained, a very principled company. But the reality is, as far as I know, maybe things are changing they're building a good business for sure. But like, there's a reason that like people would rather just go with BlackRock and like whatever, have whoever's custodying for them. And that's just because that's what people are used to. Maybe that changes one day. There's certainly a segment of people in the world that want self-custody or multi-sig. That segment also probably does have more sort of disproportionate amounts of wealth. They got into Bitcoin early. So it's not like, it's not a nothing burger. But like, sadly, the reason Coinbase is successful as a casino, the reason Three Arrows and BlockFi blew up, and also just got to say, it was not a helpful thing as part of your launch. You'd be like, we brought on world-class investor Anthony Pompliano. Like, bro, like you can't be tone deaf. Like, this is the famous to the moon. Like, I don't know. I hope for the best. Shazan has a lot.
BlockFi champion.
Yeah, bro. Like, what the fuck? Like, literally, this man was sitting there going and almost whacks his wife in the head as he's like sitting there talking about BlockFi the moon. So I would just say it's tone deaf at best. And, it's on you to come out there and right the wrongs and like explain this to people. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. I will personally say, I still think there's opportunity for the business. Clearly, he's shown he's a very savvy fundraiser. Clearly, they have a good team, and I appreciate their team has helped me a lot with some of my issues, handholding. I got nothing but great service there, so I can't say anything on that.
I'll also tell you, I mean, and you probably know this, but from having spent a lot of time with him over the last, whatever, it's 4 or 5 years, I do believe he is a principal Bitcoiner who cares about self-custody. I don't think he's just talking a talk. Like, I think he started to achieve that. And I think there's something along the way that caused him to change his mind about maybe it's the marketability or the viability of doing that as initially planned today. But I
I mean, folks can speculate on that as they will. I'm not going to take a stance on that. I don't know. What I will say is the way I look at it now is like, and Shazan has also said he wants to do things like I asked about proof of reserves. He doesn't believe in proof of reserves. Fine. Although I still think proof of reserves would be better. He says he wants to get audits. Great. Let's see the audits. I would just say, you know, my position is it's still a good business opportunity. We all invested. I invested with DLCs in mind. I want someone to do something like DLCs. If you're still thinking about the non-custodial, that's what I personally want. And I would say, look at it as of right now, it's a business with a lot of money and a smart team, but it's like BlockFi. And, you know, you can do with that what you will. And most people don't care.
I think that's a good way to wrap it up.
All right.
I think that's fair.
I have nothing to add.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Till next week.
Okay.
Okay. See you guys.